very good afternoon to you. The time is 12:07. You're listening to Midday Matters on NIPR. Thanks very much for being with us. I'm your host, Sean Beter, and joining me on this Monday, the usual suspect, it's Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. Good afternoon, Bob.
Hi, Sean.
And today we're going to be talking with members of the Fort Wayne Fiscal Policy Working Group about their recently released findings, and we want to hear from you today, so do give us a call. It's 260-452-1185. Of course, you can always call us toll-free. That's 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet. Now let's introduce those who have joined us in the studio today. We have in seat number three there, it's Fort Wayne City Controller Pat Roller. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Also in the studio with us today, it's one of our semi-usual suspects, I suppose. It's John Stafford from the Community Research Institute at IPFW. John, thanks very much for being with us. Let's jump right into the conversation here. And Controller Roller, you were the chair of this group. Can you give us some background about really the origins of this working group? I mean, why the mayor appointed the group earlier this year?
Well, it started, we've been thinking about this for probably the past year or so, with the advent of the property tax caps, which went into effect 2009. It had a huge impact on many communities throughout the state of Indiana. Fortunately, the city of Fort Wayne was well-positioned to deal with the first couple years of the property tax caps. But it is clear that even though we have, and the mayor has directed, streamlining of processes and cutting of budgets and et cetera, with the caps being in the $13 million range, approximately 10% of the revenue stream, that it's just not sustainable. And it was clear that in the near future, probably in 2014, some changes will need to be made. And we're hoping what we're trying to do, what the mayor is trying to do, is to be proactive and not dealing with it at a time of crisis, but to alleviate a crisis.
And just to review for those of our listeners, I'm sure most are already familiar, but those tax caps are capped property taxes at what, 1% for residential properties, 2% for commercial, and 3% for farms?
Yes.
Okay. It's 1% if you're a homeowner
and
live in your home, 2% for landlords who are renting their properties.
Ah, okay. All right. So what then, John Stafford, what kind of questions was the committee setting out to answer? Pat Roller just mentioned that the administration is trying to be proactive in addressing these fiscal questions. Going into this earlier this year, what kind of questions did committee members have?
I think we look at it in three stages. The first stage was, where have we been? What changes? What policies has City of Fort Wayne put into place over the last 20-some years, and what changes have occurred at the state level that impact local government finances, and then a very broad level assessment of where the city is currently, and then what are some of the options available to the city to respond to that $13.5 million difference in revenues compared to what they would have been without the caps. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of options there. The city is in a fortunate position in that it has a lot of different things that it can do, including but not limited to reducing expenditures. Right. And there are a number of larger municipalities around the state of Indiana who have relatively less control over their destiny than the city of Fort Wayne has, for a variety of reasons that I suspect we'll talk about.
Oh, I imagine so, yes. Pat Roller, can you just talk a little bit about some of the members of the working group? Because obviously you and John were part of that group, but who else was a part of this?
Well, We had Larry DeBoer, who is one of the state experts on property taxes, and has been such a pleasure to be a part of the committee.
He's been on our program before, an economist at Purdue University.
And you know, he's just fascinating to talk to because he's at a higher level, and people like me are not in the weeds, but it was kind of a nice balance on the team I learned a lot from him, and I think we taught him a bit about what it's like to the day-to-day running of the city. We had Bill Sheldrick from Policy Analytics. He's an economist, statistician, been in public government one fashion or another for several years. So he was able to do and will be able to do some of the modeling we're going to need to do as we look at some of these options to make sure everyone understands the alternatives that we can present to everyone. Hmm.
So going into this process, then, it sounds like, John Stafford, that this city is in maybe a better position than many. Despite that, is that a projected deficit in 2013?
Right. We're hoping to get through 2013. The issue really gets to be the circuit breaker is just this unknown every year, and it comes in after you set the rate. It comes in March when everything is done. We anticipated for 2012, I believe it was, we anticipated the breaker to be maybe about $11 million, came in at $13 million. We were, in 2013, I was thinking that it probably would remain at about the $13 million. It appears now it could be, depending on if you use LSA numbers or if you use policy analytic numbers, anywhere from $15 to $17 million. So the circuit breaker is a huge variable that makes it difficult to have forecasts that you can feel good about, because the information comes in later.
A big part of this equation has to be the strength of the local economy, right, John Stafford? And I know we've talked about employment numbers month to month here, that even those can be hard to predict in this kind of new normal.
Well, certainly, and particularly because we now at the local level rely on income taxes for a substantial portion of the revenue mix. Income taxes will go up and go down on the strength of an economy, and in the recession they clearly dropped off. The state found that out in a big way, and although income taxes are not as important at the local level as they are at the state level, same thing happens here. So at the same time that local governments were beginning to feel the impact of the circuit breaker, which cut into property tax revenues, income tax revenues were also leveling off, or in some cases going down, which added to the severity for some communities.
Did that unpredictability make this job harder?
I can answer that. Yes, it does make it harder. Because you do have some expenses that come up that you don't anticipate. Not only is your revenue somewhat unknown, we had the recent storm, and that's going to probably cost somewhere in the vicinity of maybe $1.5 million, $2 million. Now, we don't know what we'll get back from insurance, but the point is you just have these unknowns that are out there that you have to deal with on a regular basis.
Bob Kaler.
Pat, could you sketch about how much, what percentage of the city's revenues comes from which sources?
The majority obviously comes from property tax. It's probably in the vicinity of $105 million. We have the county option income tax, which is about $14 million. With the adjustment that we received from the state, was about $14 million. We have miscellaneous revenues, other revenues coming from either state or fines and fees to the tune of about $25 million. So overall, in 2012, we expect about $132 million in revenues. And one of the things I think the city has done so well is the budget has not increased since 2007. We've stayed at approximately $130 million. We've had some anomalies that have come up, but all the division heads, all the employees know that these are difficult times, unknown times. And I think the budgets that we've presented have been, the mayor's presented, has just been very practical budgets. We are getting to a point, though, that, fortunately for our citizens, we haven't had to cut back on any of the services that they have come to expect. And we're getting to that point where now we're going to have to, and it's part of the one of the options is to look at services and what services are taxpayers willing to pay for.
We're talking today about fiscal policy in Fort Wayne and how we adjust going forward. And we do want to hear from you. Give us a call. It's 260-452-1185. Of course, you can always email middaymatters at nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. We're going to take a quick break. We'll continue the conversation when we get back. Stay with us.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear the questions you wish you could have asked to people like Tom Kenny, the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants.
Did it help to hear what your voice sounded like on helium? Did you learn something about your voice you didn't know before?
Yeah, I learned that I don't really need the helium.
Because it's pretty easy to flick that switch and go right up there.
The most interesting people in show business on Fresh Air.
Fresh Air weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
This week on American Roots, we're riding the rivers and rails and words and music, including a visit with Captain Doc Hawley, a calliope player on the Natchez Riverboat, and with songmaker and train lover Justin Towns Earl, plus songs about steamboats, rail cars, and their riders. I'm Nick Spitzer. Join me for American Roots from PRX.
Monday night at 7 on WBOI.
Hi, this is Bob Ferguson. This week on Guitar Showcase, we'll be listening to the Newman and Altman Guitar Duo, an ensemble with over a 30-year history of performing virtuoso duet pieces for two guitars. We'll hear Newman and Altman perform a wide selection of works by contemporary composers. That's Monday evening at 9 o'clock. I hope you can join me.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Indiana Tech Law School, opening in Fort Wayne in fall 2013. Information on admissions and curriculum at www.indianatech.edu/law or 855-TECH-LAW.
Good afternoon. It's 12:20. You're listening to Midday Matters on 89.1 FM. I'm your host, Sean Beter, along with Bob Kaler from the News Sentinel. And we're talking today about the recent findings of the Fort Wayne Fiscal Policy Working Group. Joining us in the studio, it's John Stafford from the Community Research Institute at IPFW and Fort Wayne City Controller Pat Roller. And we do want to hear your questions and comments today. Give us a call. It's 260-452-1185. You can always call us toll-free at 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters at nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. And John Stafford, we were talking over the break here. You kind of wanted to touch on Bob Kaler's question about the magnitude of some of the fiscal challenges we're facing in Fort Wayne.
Well, we were talking about the impact that the circuit breaker has on property tax revenues and then the overall revenue mix and the gap between the revenues coming in on an annual basis and what the city is currently spending. And that gap is in the $3 to $6 million range. And I want to put that in some perspective. And we're talking about an annual budget that is upwards of around $130-140 million a year. So, you know, $3 million on that is less than 3%. A lot of businesses in this community and all over the country, a lot of households have been dealing with during the recession in the last few years with revenue shortfalls that are substantially higher than that. I would not characterize what the city is facing as a crisis at all. Is it an issue that it will have to address? Sure. But it's not of the magnitude that I would put in a crisis category. It's just a part of doing, of managing public resources. And at some point, you have to make some tough decisions.
And I do want to get into those tough decisions in just a little while, but you kind of jumped into the next portion of this program, is really kind of getting into the results here. And again, we were talking over the break, Pat Roller, you know, one of the big problems we face coming up, of course, is that budget shortfall. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about options here, but it seems like that's one of those things that is going to peak residents' interest, maybe above all else here.
Sure. Well, in 2012, we did have the additional $3 million circuit breaker that came in higher than what a lot of people expected. You know, and we have council who's trying to balance the taxpayers and, you know, the fiscal responsibility they have. And, you know, the levy, the dollars to be collected, was cut last year for 2012, which was $3 million. So immediately there's a $6 million swing in revenues. So it's a tough balancing act, I think, for everyone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're doing a lot of work on the services that we're providing and trying to determine what is critical, what may not be as critical, and at what level do we deliver those services.
And John Stafford, you had mentioned earlier, that one of the big challenges that we'll be facing here, of course, gas tax revenues being down. Can you maybe familiarize our listeners a little bit with that particular tax and what that money goes to?
Historically, both state government and local governments in Indiana, as in most states, had paid for maintaining and upgrading their highway systems with gasoline tax revenues. In Indiana, we pay three types of tax when we buy gasoline. One is a federal gasoline tax that goes to support things like the interstate highway system and a lot of money that comes back to support state highways, and some of it comes back locally. And then we have a state gasoline tax, and that money supports the State Department of Transportation, and it supports and has always been kind of the fundamental part of paying for roads and streets at the local level. And we also pay sales tax on that gasoline, which is a reoccurring issue as to whether we should be doing that or not. And that money goes to the state general fund and does not pay for the road system. Well, the gasoline tax, because cars are more fuel efficient, because we've been driving less during the recession, and because the rate is not adjusted in Indiana for inflation, the effective value of the gasoline tax dollars that come back to local government pay for a little less every year. And we went back and looked at comparing number of road miles and adjusting for inflation, and it's paying, you know, it's about a little more than 50 cents on the dollar of what it did maybe 15 years ago.
Oh, my.
Well, that just means that fewer and fewer streets are going to get repaved in a given year, or local units of government are going to have to rely on other sources of revenue to maintain the road systems. We've been doing that with the county economic development income tax here at both the city and the county levels for a number of years now. But even with that, there is a a gap between the number of streets we should be resurfacing in a given year and a growing backlog of projects that haven't been done. And this has been going on for at least a couple of decades now. So, you know, a road that doesn't get resurfaced in the summer doesn't heal itself in the winter.
You know, and the other interesting situation with that is with the annexations that happened in the early 2000s, you know, our miles of roads, our square miles have grown by 39%. Our miles of roads have grown by 37.5%. So we have fewer dollars to try to spread out to a wider geographic situation. So it gets more complex, but at the same time, our job is to try to figure out how to figure it out.
Before we get into figuring it out and solving all the problems of,
and we're going to be able to do that before 1 o'clock.
We have about a half hour left. I think we can get there. Does any of this shock either of you or surprise either of you? I mean, 50 cents on the dollar, John Stafford coming back from these taxes.
50 cents on the dollar compared to what it used to be.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't. Inflation hasn't been high like we saw in the 70s. Inflation over a number of years does amazing things to the value of dollars. Paychecks, revenue sources for local government, you name it. You know, if you don't periodically do some adjustment for inflation, you'll just have a diminishing ability to do what you used to be able to do. And that's the case here.
And even when gas was a dollar a gallon 12 years ago, there wasn't anybody in the General Assembly who was leaping on that as an occasion to say, this is a place where we could afford to raise gas taxes.
Right. It's really become a political third rail, both the federal level and at the state level. You know, we watched the price of gas here go up. In one day here, it went up about, 40 to 50 cents last week. You know, and we grumble and we adjust, but adding, you know, 3 or 4 cents a gallon in tax is just a politically difficult question today.
We're talking about fiscal policy in Fort Wayne on today's program with John Stafford and Pat Roller. We want to hear from you today. Give us a call, 260-452-1185. You can always email us, middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet, and we should let you know our phone lines are wide open. You'll get right through. Let's jump to some of the solutions here. I mean, this strikes me, given these challenges in the aggregate, this strikes me as a tough situation for the city of Fort Wayne. I mean, ultimately, do these revenue shortfalls mean, you know, like John said, fewer roads getting paved? Is it cuts in services? Where do we go from here?
Well, you know, we have to present to the public and to the taxpayers a variety of options. Along with our city council, we can't do anything with our city council. And, you know, they're very open and understand the issues. Now, what the resolutions will be, you know, we are probably a ways off. There is still a lot of work to do, but all those options of cutting services, adding, there's some discussion. Go ahead, John.
Adding some revenues. The city has a number of revenue options that it has chosen not to avail itself of.
Are we talking specifically about taxes?
Mm-hmm. Taxes and user fees. You know, the city 20 years ago made a decision that subsequent mayors and councils have followed through on, not to raise its property tax rates to the highest level allowed by the state controls. And in fact, has raised more than 25% less than it could have under the property tax control program over that 20-year period of time. raised about $1.5 billion in property taxes over a 22-year period of time, and did not raise another $450 million that it could have. So it chose to divert its revenues. That was all done in a pre-circuit breaker world. Turned out very beneficial. The circuit breaker impacts to Fort Wayne and other units of government that share its tax base would have been a lot worse had a different policy scenario played out. But there are things to do there. There are one of the roles that the city council plays, in addition to being the fiscal body for the city of Fort Wayne, is it also holds the majority of votes in the Allen County Income Tax Council. So it controls the level of income tax rates, local homestead credit rate. The General Assembly in 2007 put in a variety of property tax relief measures at the local level that you can use income tax to lower property tax rates for various categories of property taxpayers. And it has the majority of votes on all of those decisions. So it has a dual role to play here, not only looking at what the city of Fort Wayne needs and what the proper balance between spending and taxing and raising revenue should be, but also tax policy for all of Allen County. Because when it casts its 75 votes in that 100-vote electoral college, so to speak, you know, that's the decision is over. So it makes this a far more interesting and a far more complicated set of options.
We're going to continue the conversation in just a few minutes here. We are talking about fiscal policy in Fort Wayne today, and we want to hear from you. It's 260-452-1185. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet. We're going to take a quick break from the news. Stay with us. This is Midday Matters.
What could be better on a hot summer night in a Midwestern town than watching classic cars cruise by?
Anybody can have, you know, a car show in like a Dairy Queen parking lot, but I think people really enjoy the town square and the old historic buildings.
Sharing an American pastime, another summer night later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered airs weekday afternoons at 4 on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Good afternoon. I'm Katie Anderson with WBOI News. Longtime Indiana Supreme Court Justice Brent Dixon will be sworn in as Indiana's first new Chief Justice since 1987. The 71-year-old Dixon is the longest-serving current member of the five-member Supreme Court and has been the acting Chief Justice since Randall Shepard retired in March. He will be sworn in by Governor Mitch Daniels. Dixon will be taking over a court in transition. After 10 years of no changes, the court has its third vacancy in the past 2 years. Dixon was appointed to the Supreme Court in 1986 by Governor Robert Orr as its 100th justice. Dixon will reach the mandatory retirement age of 75 in July 2016 before his 5-year term as Chief Justice expires. As child poverty in Indiana continues to increase, the Indiana Youth Institute is stressing the need for schools to offer breakfast programs. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports.
10 years ago, child poverty was in the single digits in Indiana. It now sits at 22%. There are many ripple effects associated with the increase, including a growing number of students relying on school breakfast programs. Participation is up nearly 60% since 2005. Still, Indiana Youth Institute President Bill Stanjakiewicz is concerned there are kids who aren't getting a good breakfast.
47% of our students are enrolled in the free and reduced price lunch program, and just 26% are signed up for the breakfast program.
Students eligible for free and reduced lunch are also eligible for breakfast. And that gap between those who use the federal lunch and breakfast programs puts Indiana in the bottom half of the country. Stanjakiewicz says school districts need to pay closer attention to how many children under their care qualify for the breakfast program. He also says community organizations need to play a part, alerting schools of increased need and helping fund the startup costs for school breakfast programs. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels is still waiting to find out whether he'll be able to lobby the state legislature next year when he takes over as president of Purdue University. The state inspector general has not yet ruled whether Daniels will be covered by Indiana's revolving door law. State ethics rules require a one-year cooldown for public officials after leaving office. Daniels asked the inspector general for an informal advisory opinion in June after he was selected by Purdue trustees. Daniels said if the law is unclear, he would lean against lobbying in his first year at Purdue. Daniels plans to take office at the school in West Lafayette in January after completing his second term as governor. The Fort Wayne Tin Caps opened a 7-game homestand Saturday night against the Bowling Green Hot Rods. WBOY's Doug Gruber has the weekend results.
Saturday night, the Tin Caps scored 2 first-inning runs and then got run off the field by rain. The game was suspended in the top of the second inning to be continued as part of a Sunday afternoon doubleheader. When play resumed, the Tin Caps added 3 more runs in the third for a 5-0 lead. Single runs in the fourth and fifth innings stretched the Tin Caps' lead to 7-0. Bowling Green managed 2 runs in the sixth, but that was the end of the scoring. Fort Wayne won 7-2. In Game 2, shortened to 7 innings by league rules, Bowling Green took an early lead with single runs in the first 2 innings. Tin Caps starting pitcher Cody Hebner had trouble from the start, and in the third inning allowed 5 runs while getting only 1 out, left the game down by 7-0. The Tin Caps rallied in the sixth inning with 3 runs, added another in the seventh, but that was too little too late, lost the game to Bowling Green 7-4. Lansing's loss to West Michigan yesterday leaves Fort Wayne and Lansing tied for second place, 1 game behind Bowling Green. The Tin Caps can close that gap tonight. First pitch, 7:05. For WBOI News, I'm Doug Gruber.
And now back to Midday Matters with your host, Sean Beter.
It's Midday Matters. It's about 20 minutes before the top of the hour, 1 o'clock. We're talking today about the recent findings of the Fort Wayne Fiscal Policy Working Group. I'm Sean Beter, along with Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. And joining us in studio today, it's Fort Wayne City Controller Pat Roller and John Stafford from the Community Research Institute at IPFW. And we want to hear your voice on the air today. Do give us a call if you have a question or comment. It's 260-452-1185. Or you can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. We're at Midday Matters. And John Stafford, you touched on this a bit earlier in the program, but I wanted to get back to this question about how Fort Wayne compares to other communities in the state. I mean, looking to the next year or 2 years, are we better off, worse off, the same as other communities around Indiana?
The real impact that we're talking about here are the impact of the property tax caps on local government revenues, property tax revenues. And it essentially was where you were in terms of your property tax rate when the circuit breakers were enacted and voted into the state constitution. Fort Wayne was kind of in the middle of the pack. We had some municipalities, Gary and Hammond in Lake County, that had relatively high rates, particularly Gary. South Bend, Muncie, Anderson all had substantially higher property tax rates at that point than did Fort Wayne, and were hit substantially harder with the circuit breaker. And then you had some other communities, particularly in rural areas where the circuit breakers had relatively little impact, but some I would characterize them as more residential, affluent residential, particularly surrounding Indianapolis, where the circuit breaker impact for a city over 50,000 was substantially less than Fort Wayne. So we're kind of in the middle of the pack, maybe a little bit lower than the middle of the pack in terms of impact here. And a lot of it goes back to that not being as reliant on the property tax as the property tax controls would have allowed Fort Wayne to be. When the circuit breakers hit, it certainly played to Fort Wayne's benefit.
And Pat Roller, does that sound about right to you as you look around the state? Are you kind of saying, "Woo, I'm not Gary," or I'm?
Well, I'm president of the Controller's Affiliate for the state of Indiana through IAC, and some of the stories I hear from some of these communities on how they immediately had to lay off firefighters and police officers and make these drastic cuts because they just didn't have the resources, the cash resources, to be able to continue. So, you know, Fort Wayne was in a fortunate position through, you know, careful cash management, through making sure those budgets maintained flat over the years. You know, the city of Fort Wayne, in my opinion, regardless of mayor, regardless of council, has been conservative throughout the years and has served this community very well. And we're just at a moment in time that, I mean, this is a huge, property tax caps are a huge change in how we need to move forward. You know, the last time I think this study was done was probably 1988, you know, after the difficult 80s. There was another analysis done in the late 1990s. So we've just come to that period of time where we need to take a serious, hard look at our fiscal policies and what can we do to continue to keep the city of Fort Wayne on sound financial footing.
Bob Kaler.
Why don't you sketch out a few of the alternatives for raising revenue or for cutting costs, either one?
Let's start with the cutting of costs. And after you adjust for inflation, it's something that the city has been doing in its major operating funds since the advent of the circuit breaker. So it would be a continuation of doing that. Holding the line on basic personnel-related expenditures. Now, I would contend you can only do that so long and keep a quality workforce. The city has not adjusted salaries now for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. There will be a point in time when you do have to address that issue. And I think, as Pat mentioned earlier, looking carefully at the services the city provides and the level that it provides and seeing which are those that are least in demand by the citizens and which are most in demand. Now, for every service, there's a constituent group. There's no question about that. I've enough experience in city government to know that you can propose a cut in almost anything, and some support group comes to the fore. But, you can adjust what services you're going to provide. That's a big ticket deal, or at what level, and that's a little bit smaller impact. And what kind of a response time are we going to have in the fire department? How many police officers do we want to have on the street at any point in time, which all turns into response times? How do we want to maintain our park system going forward? Been a gem of Fort Wayne, but there's a lot of infrastructure there to maintain. Just a host of services. You know, how rapidly do we want to respond to neighborhood demands for sidewalk curb improvements? All of those things are, I think, you know, fair discussion.
I think for people who are not in the middle of this, when you mentioned user fees early in the program, it's hard to visualize what some examples of those might be outside city utilities, which mm-hmm. is a different budget and a different pot of money. So mm-hmm. what are some possibilities there of places that, like Fort Wayne, that have used, have increased some user fees?
And one that Fort Wayne went to in the 80s was paying for residential garbage collection out of a user fee, and a number of jurisdictions are dealing in part with a circuit breaker by converting to that kind of a system. Now, the city of Fort Wayne pays for street trees out of the park budget, the maintenance of street trees. You could do that through an assessment, put more of that responsibility on the residential property owner. You could do the same with street lighting. Now, all of those have potential to raise revenue through user fees, but you know, you've got an unequal ability to support that through user fees across a community as diverse as Fort Wayne. You know, some neighborhoods that that probably would be not a major impact to a household budget. In other neighborhoods, that would be a sizable impact to a household budget. But those would be some of the non-utility user fee options. The manner in which the city cost shares for curb and sidewalk improvements and just say, no, that'll all be the petitioner's responsibility.
In some of those cases, the less affluent neighborhoods would, the people there would be insulated, and as a political consideration, they'd be insulated because that would be something that landlords would pay rather than the actual residents on the street.
Yeah,
right?
In most of those neighborhoods, you're going to have a mix of owner-occupied and rental housing, and you're right, it would fall to the landlord in the case of... Now, the landlord may well attempt to pass that on in terms of the rental rate, but you're correct, yes.
We're talking today about fiscal policy going forward in the city of Fort Wayne. We want your voice on the air today. Give us a call. It's 260-452-1185. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet. And Kevin sent us a tweet here. Kevin says, can you speak to what is being done to improve fiscal responsibility, specifically to utilize local vendors, growing local business and personal tax base, specifically to avoid past issues? Is there a movement toward local vendors when possible to reduce costs, reduce money being spent on services in Fort Wayne?
The mayor and we have worked very hard to work with local vendors, and that is very important to the city and in our purchasing process. I think there are additional points between buy Indiana, buy local. And that has to be balanced again with, you know, low costs. What's the best way to do this at the best cost to the taxpayer? So we do try to balance all that as well.
Good example. Suppose you're going to go out and buy 25 police cars.
I don't think I have any need for that, but sorry, go on.
And you've got a local vendor that can, provide that that quantity of street cars, and you've got an out-of-town vendor, but will provide them at a lower cost. Which one is the fiscally responsible thing to do? Tough question, tough policy question.
And looks like we have a caller on the line. Let's get to Norbert. Norbert on line one. Good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Good afternoon. Yes, I hear you talking about user fees, which I think is a splendid idea. Because especially if it's a fee which is the user as an option on the service. And I'm wondering whether when you talk about user fees, are you talking about a fee to pay for the service or to raise the general revenue? You know, at one time tariffs were used for revenue raising. Obviously, you know, there really isn't all that much service in a tariff, but it's used to raise revenue, and I'm wondering whether you're talking about the same thing. I like user fees if they're optional. I mean, if the service is optional. For example, garbage, I think that, you know, people don't have to have all that much garbage service if they know how to recycle, if they know how to compost their vegetable scraps and to recycle the plastics and tin cans and things like that. A lot of money could be saved, in the parks. If you have a service fee for that, that's fine. I think the people that use those parks should pay for them. What do you mean by a service fee?
Indiana law is pretty clear on that. If you're going to charge a fee, it has to be directly related to the service you're providing and cannot be more than or unreasonably more than the cost of providing that service. So there has to be a direct relationship. The municipalities in Indiana don't have the ability to create a fee and then just put it into the general fund for any purpose. It has
okay,
to be
good.
Related
Do
to
you,
the
Can
service.
You give examples of services which are optional?
Yeah, either optional or mandatory. The same would prescribe that it has
are
to
there,
be.
But I'm asking for examples of optional services. Garbage is not optional, is it? You have to pay for that. I mean, you have to have the garbage service.
Yes, you're correct on that. An optional service, a number of the facility rentals, programs that the park department offers are optional in nature. You don't have to avail yourself of that facility or that particular program, but if you are, you're going to pay a user fee for it. Yeah, there's always on user fees, there's two sides to the coin. How much of it should it just be strictly on based on desire and ability to pay? And how much of that service should be made available to every resident of the community?
Yeah, well, the Allen County Library would be an example of that. I mean, this is a tremendous, I think it's a huge cost, I think. I'm not sure. And it's a very, very useful service, and those who use it, I think, should pay for it.
There would be two sides to that argument. There would be many that would say at least some basic library services ought to be made available to every resident of the community.
All right. Norbert, unfortunately, we're going to have to take a break. We're going to have to let you go. But thank you so much for your call. We appreciate
it. And thank
it.
You.
Have a very good day.
Okay.
We're talking today about fiscal policy in Fort Wayne. We do need to take a break, but we want to hear from you. 260-452-1185. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet. Stick around. It's Midday Matters.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear the questions you wish you could have asked to people like Tom Kenny, the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants.
Did it help to hear what your voice sounded like on helium? Did you learn something about your voice you didn't know before?
Yeah, I learned that I don't really need the helium.
Because it's pretty easy to flick that switch and go right up there.
The most interesting people in show business on Fresh Air.
Fresh Air weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
When Talk of the Nation wants to know if capitalism is working for Americans, we answer the phone. Virginia with us from Richmond in Virginia.
I did have a pension, but it was converted into a 401k, and for me, it's been a loser.
Jay's on the line with us from Aspen in Colorado.
The subprime mortgage market allowed me to get into a property that otherwise I wouldn't have been able to get into.
Join us, call us, Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
This is Jason Wilbur, guitarist for John Prine and host of the weekly radio series In Search of a Song. I'm proud to tell you that you can now hear In Search of a Song every Monday evening at 10 p.m. right here on Northeast Indiana Public Radio. Each week you can listen in as I talk with recording artists about the trials and revelations that have shaped their lives and their music. It's a fascinating journey, and I hope you'll join us as we go In Search of a Song.
You're listening to Midday Matters on 89.1 FM, just a few minutes before the top of the hour, 1 o'clock. We did have a response from Kevin regarding utilizing local vendors. Kevin says, you can't find the lower price if you don't inquire local agencies. Kevin, thanks very much for your question and your response. It looks like we do have a caller on the line with just a few moments left in the program. Let's go to Linda. Linda on line one, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Have you shared where you can read the study for yourself, the website or city location, or where we can review the study?
Pat Roller, where can we find the study?
The study is on the city website. If you click on SmartGov and scroll down, you will see the presentation, the fiscal policy presentation, and it's all available there.
Okay, thank you.
It's also available on City TV. The entire presentation.
Where else? Right. Again? Say that again.
On City TV.
Right. Public access. Oh. Go to the Allen County Library. Go to PEG, yeah. GPEG, I think it's PEG, and you'll find the council meeting.
All right.
Okay, and that speaks to the other argument about maintaining the use of the library. There are people who need that service.
Linda, it sounds like you're on point there. So. Yes. Thanks very much for your call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we have just a few minutes left in the program here. Bob Kaler, we were talking just a little bit over the break about revenue.
Yeah, would you folks go into some of the ways that revenue could be raised other than user fees? What are some other alternatives that might be?
I think that we probably don't have time to get into all of them, but the big one out there is the one that the General Assembly put in place about 5 years ago, just before they enacted the property tax caps, and that was providing additional property tax relief through a higher income tax rate and then using that revenue to offset people's property tax bills. And that has the effect, indirectly, of providing more revenue to local units of government here in Allen County by reducing the circuit breaker. And it gets kind of complicated to explain that, but if you reduce somebody's property tax liability, then you'll have less of a circuit breaker hit to the city and other jurisdictions, and that would certainly be enough to close at least the operating gap.
Oh, well, that was going to be my next question. Was I mean, in your observations, is that enough to make up the deficit?
Yes, you wouldn't even have to use nearly all of the authority that you had to do that. You could use a modest portion of it. I wouldn't say small, a modest portion of it, and you would close the city's revenue gap, you'd close the county's, and you'd provide benefit to property owners. But the money would come then from income taxpayers, so one pocket to another.
Pat Roller, just a few seconds left in the program here. Next steps in this process, what comes now that the working group has done its job?
Well, the next steps are going to be we have determined the list of options that are available. There is going to need to be a lot of work done to make sure that we've evaluated each of these options and how they impact the taxpayers so that everyone has a clear understanding of if we were to introduce a LOIT, what does that do to the property tax? What does that do to the city? If we were to cut the budget, what kind of services do we think we would need to cut in order to be able to balance the budget? How palatable is that?
So more to come on this issue.
A lot more work to be done, yes.
All right. Well, Pat Roller, John Stafford, thank you very much for being with us today. Bob Kaler, thanks to you as well. You're listening to WBOI Fort Wayne. Have a great day.